Thank you for downloading this episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. To get more episodes and explore other SDN and network automation resources, visit sdn.ipspace.net.
One of the never-ending religious debates in the automation community is which tool is the best. Of course, my tool is always the best, no doubt about that.
No, mine's the best.
That was Chris Young. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
I always believed that Ansible is the best tool to use. And then people started saying, no. There's this new kid on the block, and it's so much better than Ansible. I'll explain to you how it works. And I've heard that from like three people, and I went like, maybe we should explore what this salt thingy does. Then I stumbled upon a Nanoc presentation by Mircea Iulinic. Did I get your name right?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, awesome. Mircea is working for Cloudflare, and he had a presentation on Nanoc, how Cloudflare is using SaltStack. And Mircea was kind enough to invite Seth House, who is working for SaltStack. So we'll get all the answers we'll need today. Also with me are Chris Young from HPE and David G from, still from Brocade, right? Or is it Broadcom these days?
No comment.
Okay, so let's start with an easy one. Why should I use SaltStack and not Ansible?
Well, in the very beginning, I would like to make sure we use the same vocabulary we set the right expectations.
Okay.
When people think about an automation product, many would like something like they install and somehow magically solves all their problems. Well, none of the existing software does that, at least not for the moment. And it's also good to emphasize that at the end of the day, any of them, either if it's called Ansible, SaltChef, and so on, they are open source software, and they can only get better just contributing ourselves to them. Also, I want to make sure that people realize that the best tool that miraculously covers all needs in the world has not been invented yet.
So are you telling me the vendors are lying to us?
Yes, and in my opinion, this will never happen. There will not be any tool that covers all the possible needs in the world, especially in the network environment where there are so many different environments and so on.
On behalf of the vendors, I think we prefer the term marketing.
All right, I can use that. Yeah, some tools that cover a couple of needs very well, others that will cover others perfectly. So it depends on your particular case. Now, for a network engineer specifically, I would like to make sure that before going to the substance of this question, we need to make very clear that the difference between orchestration and automation. Automation mostly refers to configuration management. At the very basis, you have a template, you render it, and you load it on the device. And pretty much that's the automation everyone talks about. And you do this executing a command. Like if you remind about Ansible, you are running a playbook, right? But what happens when you need to load your changes when a certain event occurs? For example, one of your BGP neighbors goes down. You go and execute manually a command, like you go and type playbook, myplaybook.yaml, bring up or reconfigure my BGP sessions. Basically, you have replaced the manual task with another manual task, right? Obviously, the plenty of improvements doing this, one of them, of course, being the consistency you assure in your network. But to me, this sounds like pseudo-automated. And here comes the orchestration. An orchestration can teach your system to listen to events, and it knows by itself when to go and apply changes. It would be like, that BGP neighbor went down. Okay, I'm going to apply these changes now. And at the end, it will eventually send you a summary telling you, hey, you had the neighbor down. But don't worry about it. I handle it, and you can enjoy your cocktail on the beach. So that's the orchestration. And the SALT is an orchestration. This being is an orchestrator. That being the big, big difference between SALT and Ansible.
Perfect explanation. Thank you.
Architecturally, SALT has very little in common with the other players that it's often lumped into the same category with. At the very beginning, SALT was written to be this real-time communication bus, right, between all of the equipment in your infrastructure, servers or other equipment. And so this real-time bus, which is one possible topology, but it's the most common topology, allows us to do things across an infrastructure in real time. And it also doesn't matter where the initiating command comes from. It could be the one central machine, or it could be from one of the actual bits of equipment in the infrastructure. So it's both push and pull. And so architecturally, it has nothing in common with the other tools.
So I just want to make sure I understood that. So you're saying one of the main differences between Salt and some of the other tools is Salt is able to be reactive to events happening in the environment?
Yeah, that's well said. So the events that go across this real-time communication bus can be initiated from the master. They can be initiated from anywhere in the network. And then we can respond to those in real time. So if you want to know, you know, if load goes up above a certain average or, you know, some kind of setting, if you want to know if somebody logs in or somebody logs in as root or somebody fails to log in, that sort of thing. These are the kinds of things that we can listen for and respond to. Since Salt was written to be able to do this from the get-go, there's a few things that just kind of naturally fall out of that. One of those is remote execution. You can just run a command on all of your servers and get a response back, right? And then something that builds on top of that is the configuration management that that we're kind of often pigeonholed for. And so configuration management in Salt is really just yet another command and control. It's just a function that we run that performs a configuration management task.
Okay, let me step back one step. Mircea, I liked your explanation. The way automation versus orchestration is usually explained is automation is replacing a manual task with a computer-driven or whatever automated procedure, whereas orchestration is stringing together multiple automated tasks in a sequence.
Yes.
And you added the reactive part, which is responding to external events and then triggering a string of steps that must be done to respond to that event.
Yes, yes, exactly. Basically, you instruct the system to listen to some events, can be either internally from Salt, either externally. For example, when it also from the system, from more specifically on a network device, you can listen to syslog or any other, how depending how you instruct it, on what you want to listen to. And it imports these events and translates into a Salt, let's say, Salt language, imports them into the event bus. And depending on this, you can react and do the logic you need in your network.
Okay, now Seth, a question for you. We had a podcast with two Mats from Brocade that work in the StackStorm team. So how would you compare SaltStack with StackStorm?
There's a fair bit of high-level overlap. So they've got a very robust decision engine baked into StackStorm. We've got a lighter weight decision engine in Salt's reactor, but we began development about a year ago on something called Thorium, which is a bit more of a robust decision engine. And the decision engine in Salt is doing things like, it's very open-ended, very free-form. So, you know, with Thorium, for example, you could say, if we see the following series of events within, you know, a 5-minute window, then go ahead and throw something onto the Slack channel to just let somebody know, or send an email, or kick off a configuration management run, or, you know, sky's the limit, that sort of thing. And so one of the differentiators is because we've got our fingers into all of the equipment in the infrastructure, we can take remediation actions or collect information or that sort of thing, just as part of our normal day-to-day kind of Salt workflow.
A couple of questions around the events. How are you getting those events? And what events from a network specific are you processing? So you mentioned syslog. David, I'm going to do it. SNMP.
From syslog specifically, you can listen to a channel. There are some Python tools that only need to connect to this address and using the default or a specific syslog port. And if you import it with something that is called beacon in the Salt language. And with a simple module, it is translated and put in such a way, in a form of event that has a specific unique tag. You can match then and react.
This sounds very, very similar to StackStorm. This isn't a difference, but it's just interesting anyway. I didn't know SaltStack could do this so much.
Yes, as Seth said, there are many overlaps. But the biggest difference is that Salt has now network automation for cross-vendor embedded by default. So install Salt and you have everything up. Basically, people now are using Ansible and on the top of Ansible Stackstorm. So that's ready to tools, while the equivalent is just Salt Stack.
Okay, everyone is claiming that they have solved all the network automation problems, and we already discussed that is not true. So what can I do with Salt Stack in networking space?
I can manage anything you want in terms of configuration management. And it's not only about rendering templates. It's also doing it in a beautiful way, in a pure ops style, plus reacting and loading configurations or changing configs depending on events.
So if you're talking about configuring anybody's device, that makes me very skeptical. So are you guys agent-based? Is Salt agent-based? What's the communication path? Is it SSH only, APIs for devices? What does that look like, and what vendors are actually tested and supported?
It supports all vendors that are supported in Nepal. So basically, there are Arista, several platforms from Cisco, like iOS, Nexus, IOSXR, then okay. Juniper, then what else? MikroTik, Palo Alto, and so on.
So Salt is inheriting the network support from Napalm.
Exactly. Napalm is embedded now in Salt Stack.
Okay,
and I have to point out that we did several podcasts with David Barroso and Elisa Yashinska discussing Napalm. So anyone who's really interested in what Napalm can do can go and listen to those podcasts. But it's great to hear that you solved the problem with a great existing tool instead of reinventing the wheel.
Well, I was going to say that's really the bread and butter of Salt. We integrate, as a philosophy, we try to integrate with everything. We've got this generic bus, and we can integrate with tools and then throw information from those tools over this existing bus. And so that's sort of our philosophical approach to things. You asked before about, you know, what kinds of things can we trigger events from? Well, that's just one of many pluggable interfaces in Salt. And so if you want to trigger an event on something, it's just a tiny little Python module that collects the information, whatever in whatever is the best way for that information, and then sends it up the bus. You could write one of these in, you know, maybe 10, 20 line stops.
You said that you can also do periodic polling, which means that you can periodically poll any getter from Napalm and compare that to desired state, and then say, well, I just lost a BGP neighbor.
Yes, exactly. And you used exactly the right keyword, state. If anyone is comfortable with Puppet, pretty much the same is in Salt, something called state, that makes sure that on the device we have exactly what you expect to be. So you define in a simple YAML file the entities of data. They do not depend at all on the vendor. I always use this tiny example of NTPPS and servers because it's trivial to be understood. You define a list of NTPPS, and they do not depend at all. Looking at it, you don't know if it's going to be loaded on a Cisco device or Juniper and so forth. You only know that you have this entity of data and you want them on the device configured. And the state makes sure you have it exactly like that. And yes, you can use these states either, as you said, to schedule the state to be called at specific intervals on time, either or to when reacting on specific events.
Okay, but still, if you're using Napalm, Napalm can push configuration changes, but you still have to prepare the configuration, probably using some templates. That means you still have to have templates for Juniper and Cisco and Arista, right?
That's correct, yes. That's the question someone asked me at some point. Oh, but I still need to write templates. Well, we are still not at that point where OpenConfig is widely deployed and to have OpenConfig templates everywhere and standardized. So this depends on each environment.
For templates, you're using Jinja, I hope?
Here's another beautiful part of Salt. It's not only about Jinja. It's about much more. It's about a few other templating systems like Mako, Cheetah, Genshi, and so on, and also even pure Python. So this is why some people easily migrated from Puppet, which supported ERB, and they simply copy-paste their templates and said, I want to use the templating engine, not Jinja. I want to use Mako.
Okay.
The templating engine in Salt is yet another pluggable interface. At the end of the day, Salt uses all of these templating engines, sometimes in conjunction with each other, to produce a data structure. So if you can get us a data structure, we don't care where it comes from. That means database queries, templating engines, really, we don't care.
Okay. And the next thing you'll tell me is that you have these plugins for all major databases, right?
Yeah, we do. We integrate with all of the usuals.
This sounds too good to be true. What's wrong?
How easy is it to get these plugins installed? This sounds like it is a really wide set of complexities. If you're supporting multiple template engines, multiple databases, you have to do so much normalization to get that data into the engine. And so how easy is it to install them?
Or are you using just the vendor-provided integrations and then transforming it into native Pythonic data structures?
Hold on.
It depends on what aspect of Salt we're talking about. So some parts of Salt are freeform, some parts are more structured. So in the case of, you know, say templating config files, we just care about the resulting config file and we put that in place. For getting data into Salt, we've got a system called Pillar, and Pillar is freeform data. So it's so you pull that data structure in whatever format you want to work with, right? You know, if you want to use that data, for example, to inform how you would write out a configuration file. So it's freeform, and so you just decide whatever you want to work with. And then last, if you wanted to do something like dynamically generate Salt's configuration management templates, there is a predefined structure for that. So wherever you get that data, you need to format it in what is called a high state data structure.
I wanted to add that to what Seth said, that Pillar is not only about files. They are entities of data, but there can be much more. You can say, I want to use a source of truth, not this file. I want to use this database. And automatically, Salt will know to follow that database. And when something changes, will be refreshed. And eventually, if you want to have to use it together with the reactors, which will deploy automatically your config when a new entry in database is added or changed and so on.
So it's doing data pumping from the database as well?
It can use multiple sources of truth, not only files. That was the idea. Then how you use it can be many diverse options.
So if you've already got an NMS with a database that's already massaging and normalizing your syslogs and SNMP traps, you just have to do a SQL query against the database rather than try to write all your regular expressions to parse through your syslogs.
The SQL extraction, you don't need to do it manually. You are just modules already written. You only say, I want to use this. Of course, if you want to use something that no one heard about it, you will need to write your own module for sure. But most of them are.
I'm still confused because you haven't recreated a wheel yet.
That's my goal. This is what I'm trying people to understand. Most of the things are already there. Many people wrote so many tools like Napalm, like NetMiko. They are fantastic. You just need to use them and glue them together. And I see so many people doing, I don't like it. I'll write my own, blah, blah. That's not the right attitude.
Salt is a very good glue. It is. I mean, the core of Salt is this tiny encrypted high-speed communication infrastructure. And then the bulk of Salt is all of these modules, these pluggable interfaces. So getting data into Salt, getting data out of Salt, you know, having Salt do various things on various systems is really what we're all about. We are flexible, sometimes to a fault.
Okay, so you have this encrypted message bus, and then you just plug things into it, which, if I understood things correctly, makes Salt an inherently distributed in scale-out system, right?
Yes.
So do you have to run Salt on multiple nodes, or can you start really small with like a container that contains everything and then scale it out as you need?
There's a variety of topologies that are possible with Salt. So, you know, if you just want to play around with it, you can install the Salt. We call them the master and the minion demons, and have them use that high-speed bus. We've also got an SSH transport if you just want to SSH into a system and run Salt that way. If you go that route, one of the nice things about that transport is when you do switch over to 0MQ, if you do, then you don't need to change anything in your workflow. You just tell Salt how to contact your minions over 0MQ rather than SSH, and everything else stays the same.
So how is data passed around? So I've done a little bit of reading on this, and we have pillars are passed to the minions. So is a pillar individually passed along, or is it a bit like Puppet, where a whole catalog of these things is passed across?
Pillar is minion-specific data, so a minion will request its pillar from the master, and the master will generate that and then send it down to the minion.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so first let's define what is a master, what is a minion?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the master daemon is your central server that all of the minions connect to. So the minions connect to the master, not the other way around, which means in your infrastructure, you just have to open those two ports on the master. And then the minions connect and go from there. So you don't need to open anything on the individual minions. And then you can then send out commands to those minions from the master. Of course, if you happen to be logged into a minion, you can just invoke Salt right there directly on the minion. So with this communication channel, we use 0MQ to do the connection between the master and the minion. 0MQ is the default transport, and then we compress messages over the wire using a library called MessagePack. In both cases, they were chosen because they are so fast for their respective jobs. And so you can run a command on a bunch of minions and get that response back, depending on how long the command actually runs on the minion. So if it's just a quick one-off, right, just shelling out, checking uptime or whatever, oftentimes you can get a response back from all of those minions faster than your terminal can draw that response to the screen. So with these two ports that you open on the master, one of them is a PubSub port that can send out a message to all of your minions simultaneously. And then the second one is a dedicated two-way channel, which is used for private messages.
So the communication bus is really 0MQ.
Yes. And that's the default transport. We've got a couple of other transports that we experiment with. SSH, as I mentioned, we've also got a TCP-based transport that uses the Tornado networking library that provides some kind of interesting aspects, but it's still in development.
And the master server is like the coordinator, and the minions do the actual work with the plugins we discussed before, right?
Yeah, well said. One of the nice things about farming that work off to the minions is you can have a great number of minions connected to a single master. Every time I talk to the guys from LinkedIn, they've increased by another 10,000. At SaltConf last year, they had 30,000 minions connected to a single Salt Master.
So is minion running on every controlled node, or would a minion then control many nodes?
The minion daemon runs directly on the node to maintain that high-speed connection. With proxy minions that Mircea can speak to, we can then have a minion call out to some external system. Usually that's done for, say, networking equipment.
Yes. A proxy is acting exactly like a minion, but is running on a separate machine. It's not running on a network device. So it does everything like a regular minion does, just it connects to the device. And in our case, how it connects to the device is through Napalm.
Okay, so you are using the same conceptual architecture as Chef or Puppet with agents running on the managed nodes if the managed nodes are, let's say, Linux servers. The regular minions, are they running on Linux servers that are managed by Salt, or are they running somewhere else?
Yes, the minions, usually a regular minion, yes, does. It runs directly on the device you manage.
The agent does run on the individual servers. The difference between, say, Puppet and Chef is that connection is still bidirectional. So you can get things from that central server, or you can push things up from the minion directly. And both operations work exactly the same. They're both first class. But there is an agent running on the minion in that default configuration with 0MQ. And if you don't want that agent running, then you would use our SSH transport.
So for the agent in proxy mode, how many network switches could be handled by a single agent running in proxy mode? And my other question would be, how does any dependencies, like if every one of these suddenly needs to have Napalm and all the binaries for Napalm installed on the minions, how is that configuration management pushed to the minion at the same time? Is that just native Salt, or is there anything special I have to do?
So each proxy is a separate process per device. So if you have 100 devices, you will have 100 proxy processes running. They are totally independent. They will not overlap.
But I could have 100 processes running on a single server.
Yeah, and they are lightweight. They consume like 40 megs of RAM. So if you have 100 devices to manage, you only need a server with 4 gigs of RAM.
When did 40 meg become lightweight?
It's because we're getting old.
Ask that.
We're old, guys. Wow. It's okay.
So since Bill Gates said add more RAM.
I remember the days when I had a 5 meg disk drive.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not as old as you, but
with a lock-in plate for the platters?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
Ouch.
Yeah.
So you need a proxy minion for every network device, and that proxy minion does the regular salt communication with the master, and then uses napalm to connect to the device through SSH or netconf or whatever napalm is using. And then that one minion is controlling just that one device, so there is no multiplexing there.
Yes, that's correct.
Is there any memory saving stuff going on? Sorry.
Yeah, shared library stuff.
Yeah, so for instance, if you've got 100 nodes and you're running like, you know, 15 different versions of software, I'm just thinking, is that 40 meg relatively fixed, or does it have to load its own set of libraries and then obviously load the differences for the software versions it's talking to?
Napalm is not heavy at all. I'm running on a couple of hundreds of devices, and there's no difference if I run one device or several hundreds.
Even with differences?
The only problem is that napalm and things like that are written in Python, and because it's written in Python, you can't use the shared library approach.
Or just does it make a copy in memory then?
Yeah. As Mircea said, who cares? It's only 40 meg.
I mean, if you have 100 devices, I think you can afford a 4 gigs RAM server.
Well, you wouldn't believe where some people are trying to cut costs, but let's not go there.
So we've said a single master a bunch of times. Can we have more than one master?
Yes, you can. You can distribute them. Someone asked recently. They said they have a network of several thousands of devices. And I said, okay, if it's a global network, you can distribute your processes to be managed by, you can make hierarchies. And you can have a distributor of processes to be managed by local masters. Like in Europe, you have one master, in North America, another master, and so forth. That depends only on your own environment. You can do whatever you want. And also in Salt, you can have a hierarchy. You can have a master of masters. Over several masters, you can have a upper layer master and so on.
Ah, so that was the next question. How do the masters exchange data between themselves?
In that case, a master that is managed by another master, they don't manage the master process directly. The lower level is a minion in that case. So the master at the top only sees a regular minion.
Ah, so it looks like route reflectors.
Very good comparison.
And can a minion have a relationship with two masters? Is there like any HA, active, passive? If a master dies, are we running around with a bunch of orphaned million? Suddenly I have that, you know, looking for bananas in the movie.
Minion.
Yes, the orphaned minions.
You stole my question, by the way, Chris.
The dinosaur goes into the volcano.
Yes, that is the thing. So there's two aspects of this. One is, since we're using 0MQ, if a master goes down, right, if you, say, reboot the master or just restart the service, the daemons are set up to automatically reconnect and pick up where they left off. So if they're waiting to deliver a message, then when it comes back up, they'll deliver the message, within reason. But then there's also a multi-master configuration. So there's a variety of topologies that are possible. So that tiered architecture that Mircea was talking about is called Syndic. And then we've got one called multi-master. And multi-master is for HA purposes. So we've got hot-hot and failover configurations.
So if you don't care about high availability that much, let's say if you're okay with VMware's definition of high availability, then 0MQ is good enough because the messages don't get lost and 0MQ is taking care of that. And when you restart the daemons, they will pick up the messages and respond to them. But of course, you will have an outage of, I'm making this up, 30 seconds. If you can't survive that, then you deploy two masters in high availability setup, right?
Yeah, that's fair to say. And I should say the messages that are preserved via normal 0MQ is the messages. The replies to messages from the master to the minion. If the master is restarted and the minion has, the result of a job, for example, to return, it'll deliver that when the master comes back up. But the going in the other direction, if the master's down, of course, this doesn't matter. But going in the other direction, the master sends out publishes. So if the minion service is down and it misses that publish, then it just misses it. But that goes to Salt's configuration management portion, which is, like all of the others, it's idempotent. So, if you miss one message, it doesn't matter. And the next time it comes up, it just configures itself in whatever way you've told it to. So missing that message in that direction is not a big deal.
So the minion dies and the master pushes out a change and the minion misses the change. But when the minion comes back up, it contacts the master saying, hey, what do I have to do? And then it just gets the whole thing and executes the change.
Similar. I would say the minion knows how it's been told to be configured. So if a minion is to be configured as a web server or a database server, it knows that. And so when it comes up, if it has missed the command from the master to say, go ahead and enforce your configuration, then it can enforce that configuration as it starts up, if you've configured it to, or just the next time that publish comes out from the master.
So Mircea, how does this work with network devices? Are we generating target configs and then Napalm is doing the tricks it does to replace the current config with a target config? Or is there anything else going on behind the scenes?
Yes, it's very close, and it's not only replacing. Depends what you want. It can be also merge. For example, the states are grouped by their logical what they do. For example, NTP state manages only that a chunk of config that refers to NTP. BGP state similarly only to BGP and so forth. And they will apply merge. Also, the user is able to apply replace. So it's flexible.
Yeah, but if we talk about, let's say, NTP servers, that's an easy one. In Juniper, you can replace the whole configuration section. So if you have three servers and you add one and you remove one, in Junos, that's an easy task. But in iOS, you actually have to figure out that, oh my, I have to remove that one and add this one. So is that done by Napalm, or is there special logic in Salt to do that?
I would say it's both. Firstly, is a state retrieves what is on the device and then compares. Oh, you have this on device and you want this, and makes a diff. And on the device, what will load is exactly that diff. I will delete these NTP peers because you don't need them anymore. And I will add those ones. So it adds and removes exactly what it has to be added and removed.
So it's not doing configuration compare. It's actually using Napalm getter to get the state.
Yes.
Computes the diff between the current state and the target state.
Yes.
And then with the diff goes into the configuration template and generates the configuration files that need to be executed to remediate the state diff.
Yes, this is what a standard state does. But not all chunks of config have been standardized, as would be overkill. Other chunks, the user has to write their own template. And then is not necessarily the same. They can use the replace or what they want, depending on how they structure the template. So it's not an intrinsic logic. It's more, this is how standard templates have been designed, because this is more optimal. But if it's too complicated for the user to do something like that for their own needs, they only need to write the template, which has replace options.
Yeah, because what we just talked about sounds great. But that means that I would need to have getters in Napalm for every functionality I want to manage on the device. And that does seem like an overkill.
Yes, if you want to do it optimal. But you can also, as I said, in your template, you're not constrained to something like that. You can have a generic template that only goes and removes everything and loads what you have in the pillar. The pillar being, again, the entity of data that is used as source of truth.
Okay, so we mentioned pillar a number of times, and I still don't get it. So what is a pillar?
A pillar is just free-form data that you can use for whatever you need. So a pillar could be the contents of an SSH private key, or it could be the name of a package for a given operating system. It is minion-specific data that is distributed to each one of the minions that you can then use to, say, configure the machine based on that data, that sort of thing.
Or the contents of a network configuration specific to that device.
Well said.
Mm-hmm. Right, but yes. The pillar is just the information that only applies to that specific device.
Can be also, a pillar can be either. I can use it only to target some specific devices. I want this entity of data to be on this device only. or you can say, I want on all of them.
So Pillar is really the target device state.
It is freeform data, so it can be used for targeting. So you can say, the following minions get this role, and the following minions get this other role, and so then you can target based on those roles, in addition to, say, sending down configuration parameters or file contents or whatever else.
No, I should have said desired device state, sorry.
Yes, that's better said.
Can I just is
what you expect to be, I mean, what you want to be there.
Yeah.
When you keep saying freeform data, do you just mean a generic arbitrary blob of data, or is it data that's in YAML or JSON that is just arbitrary? I mean, is it structured in some kind of a way?
It is completely arbitrary, so you can pull it from the contents of, say, Jinja and YAML files, and that's, you know, a default configuration, so you can just do that. But you can also, say, query a database, or get that data from some external system, or really whatever you want to do.
So I could have, like, a blob of JSON or something?
Exactly.
Okay.
Pillar is yet another one of our pluggable interfaces, so if you wanted to, say, get Pillar data by querying an HTTP service that returns a blob of JSON, that's a common practice.
Okay, now the usual questions I would ask whenever we talk about a product. It's open source, right?
Yes.
Apache 2 on GitHub.
Can I get support?
Yes. Salt is the open source project, and Salt Stack is the company around it. And we provide support, training, services, professional services, all that stuff.
So when I'm talking about the product, I should say Salt.
Salt Stack supports Salt.
Perfect.
Is there, like on Ansible Tower is the commercial add-on to Ansible open source? Is there something similar for Salt?
We have an enterprise product, and that does include a GUI. It is a separate product, so it's unfair to characterize it as a GUI for Salt, but rather it's a product that makes use of Salt's pluggable interfaces to build something on top of Salt that makes use of Salt.
Is Salt all written in Python? So barring the things that you've integrated against, maybe like say 0MQ, all of the code around Salt itself, is it all Python?
Yeah, that's correct. Some of the libraries that we dev on have C bindings, but all of okay. The code is Python.
So how hard is it to install? If I decide that, yeah, I want to try this out, will I be ready to deploy my first configuration in 5 minutes, 3 days, or 5 weeks?
Definitely 5 minutes. This is one of the things that we don't hype in our docs as well as we should. But installing Salt is really the following steps. You install the Salt master package, the Salt minion package. You tell the minion where the master is. You start both of the daemons. You accept the minion key, and you're off and running. You can get the whole thing done in just a few minutes.
I wanted to add that the latest NANOG conference, NANOG 69, I had a tutorial, and I've gone step by step from scratch. I just booted the AWS server instance, and from scratch, I installed the packages. I went to the environment, where are the files to be edited, and how to configure them, and how to install Napalm, and to set up all the environment, till we got in a point where I had touched the surface of orchestration, all in 1 hour and a half. So anyone can start from zero to in less than 2 hours to have a real orchestration system without requiring to write any single line of code.
Mircea, you were cheating. You knew what you had to do.
What do you mean?
I agree that you can set this up in 1 or 2 hours, but you knew what you had to do. If I would be searching around like crazy, then it would take me longer. That was my initial question.
I have provided in that tutorial step by step. So basically, if you follow that document, it's a PDF of 80 slides. Just having this document, you should be able to get it up and running in, maybe not 1 hour and a half like I did, but to have the orchestration in an afternoon is doable.
Okay, the next problem we have with all these open source projects usually is they have tons of dependencies. What are the dependencies for Salt? How many other things do I have to install to get Salt up and running?
Salt was written to not have to require a lot of infrastructure. You don't have to set up a database in order to use Salt. You don't have to have a lot of supporting services. So Salt itself comes with a small list of dApps for Xerum Q message pack, right, for the transport layer. It comes with dApps for cryptographic library and then a few templating libraries, and then the Tornado concurrency framework. So that's most of it, or that's the bulk of it. I'm probably missing one or two, but the Python libraries that come in with Salt are pretty lightweight. And then the pluggable interfaces that Salt uses, they can have their own dependencies. So, for example, if you're integrating with a MySQL server, probably doesn't make sense for you to be loading the Python or the Postgres database adapters. And so as you bring in various Salt modules in your infrastructure, then you install the dApps for those. So that would be, you know, the MySQL database adapters, or if you need to integrate with Git, that would be the Git CLI or that sort of thing.
But the core infrastructure, as you said, is very lightweight, so I don't have to install too many things around it.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if you wanted to integrate Salt with the database, for example, if you wanted to persist Salt job returns for, you know, longer than our default, which is we've got a job cache that hangs around for 24 hours. But if you wanted to persist that for, you know, 6 months or something, then you would decide on a data store. You would activate that module by, you know, installing the dApps for that module. So that might be, you know, the Redis database adapter or whatever else. And then you funnel that data into their yet another pluggable system. We try not to have an opinion on what you use. We try and integrate with everything.
Are you guys able to do Windows systems management as well?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, okay. We've got a Windows installer, and we've got a lot of Windows-specific modules, and a lot of the modules that are in pure Python just work.
From a doc standpoint, one thing, again, a lot of us network guys, we've been down the Ansible road quite a bit. One thing that they have done, I would say, admirably well, at least to give us a tip of the hat, is they've included networking-specific docs over the last, you know, probably year, 6 months to a year. Is that, how are the docs with Salt? Is there anything networking specific for networking engineers to be able to go in? Because again, that's for our particular domain. One of the challenges is a lot of the network guys are really comfortable with the CLI unless it's Linux.
In the docs, if you search for Napalm, you will find a couple of pages, about 10 to 15 pages pointing you. They are split in modules and you can see them there, how to use. And one advantage of Salt is that documentation is really, really great. No one ever complained about this. Everyone says only good things about documentation, and it has usage examples concrete from the real world.
Awesome. Our docs are comprehensive. One of the things to keep in mind as you're getting into Salt is many things to many people. Some people use it as an event bus. Some people use it as an orchestration tool. Some people use it as a remote execution tool. Some people use it as a configuration management tool. And so we certainly need to, say, build out more tutorials to say, you know, if you're trying to do this with Salt, read through, you know, this path in the documentation. If you're trying to do this completely different thing, read through this path. And so just keep that in mind as you're getting into the docs. They are comprehensive, but it helps if you know where to look or can ask somebody. And our IRC channel is really great for that.
Mm-hmm. That's the challenge also in the Slack channel on Network to Code, where many of the engineers are right now using a Salt stack with Napalm. They ask, where can I read about it? And I point them to the documentation. Everything is there. You just need to look exactly, depending on what you need to do.
One of the things I'd like to encourage listeners to do is to just try it out. Like I said before, our docs don't walk new users through, you know, how easy it is to get up and running with Salt. And, you know, Ansible's done a good job of getting the word out for how easy it is to get started with Ansible. But in my opinion, it's every bit as easy to get started with Salt. That was one of the reasons that I started using Salt in the early days. I'm a Salt contributor before I am a Salt stack employee. And playing with other tools, I came across Salt and I got it up and running in just a few minutes.
The other question that came to mind is Ansible has seemed to have won the hearts and minds of networking people. Why do you think that might be from a Salt perspective? The networking world, for whatever reason, and I make no value judgment, seems to have chosen Ansible, the majority of the networking world.
Till 1 year ago, nothing existed on the network side in Salt stack. That's the main reason. Okay. Because that term we have discussed earlier about proxy minions, They have been introduced only in the latest versions. So it was not because Salt is basically an agent. You need to install it on the device you manage. We could not do this on the network device, of course. And till they have introduced the proxies, it was not possible.
Okay, Chris, let's revisit the landscape in 2 years. And let's see what will happen till then.
Is there an easy install for this? So, for instance, I mean, is it like a Vagrant file or an install script? So I think one of the things about this, I mean, an easy install should be an easy install.
I have deployed a Docker container, but it's not optimal. I mean, I tried it on a Mac. I didn't work a lot on it. I still need to augment it to see how it works. But I would not recommend on a Docker, only if you want to check a bit to see it running, just very basic. But of course.
Yeah. Okay. I think to Chris's point, networking engineers are good with networking CLIs, but and I don't speak for everybody on the planet here, but when a network guy comes across, or a network girl even comes across Bash and install this and install that and install the other, there is a mark of fear normally that goes across the face. So, yeah, easy install has to be one of those things. It's got to be easy.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, Seth, if I want to install Salt, where should I start? What should I do?
If you go to the Salt Stack documentation, we've got instructions for all of the major operating systems. But the short version is, for whatever operating system you happen to be running on, grab the package from your favorite package manager. So, you know, yum install Salt Master, or grab the Windows installer, that sort of thing, and install it. Tell the minion where the master is, and you're up and running.
Vagrant file?
We have Vagrant files. I don't think we've got any linked in the docs. I don't think we've got an official Vagrant file, but I know people in the community have certainly done that.
So in your opinion, how hard is it for someone who hasn't seen Salt in his life before to just go and install it and start using it?
To install and start using Salt, it really is just following the step-by-step instructions, and you'll be up and running with being able to do the remote execution in just a few minutes. So you get that instant feedback of saying, I can run this command on a remote server. If you're comfortable with the command line, that's just a drop-in. It's easy. If you're less comfortable with the command line, you might want to stick to the Windows installer, but you'll still need the Windows command line to kick off commands. But at least it'll be the Windows command line instead of the Linux.
And one final question. With many open source tools, they work great when you try them out. Then you try to deploy them across 1,000 or 10,000 nodes. And all of a sudden, you run into all sorts of scalability challenges. So how well does Salt scale in real life?
The default settings, so when you install Salt, the configuration file is put in place, and the configuration file is completely commented out by default. So as you start to need to tweak things, you can uncomment some of those lines. So the default configuration, depending on how much work you have the master doing, how much load you have on the master already, but you know, assuming the master is not a busy machine, the default settings in Salt work to several thousand hosts, just out of the box, no scaling issues.
I think I read an article, but it was already pretty old. LinkedIn scaled it to 70,000 nodes. That was, I think, 2 years ago. They are still using Salt, and they are bigger since then. So I have no idea how is the architecture of their server farm. I don't know how many masters they have. But this number, 70,000 nodes, is impressive in my opinion.
That's one of the things that that a lot of our customers come to us for, is that scaling. Salt was written from the ground up to be highly scalable, and so that's a lot of the customer base and word of mouth that we get. And LinkedIn's example is a great one. So of those 70,000, I don't know how many minions they have between them, but I know one of those masters, as I mentioned before, is talking to 30,000 minions directly.
So if I would have minions that wouldn't be too chatty or too work intensive, like network devices where I hopefully change configuration every second blue moon and not every second, I could easily control a network of several thousand devices with a single Salt Master, right?
Yeah,
I think so.
I'd be optimistic.
So it all sounds great. If people decide to download Salt and install it and they run into problems, can they get in touch with you guys? And if so, how?
Yeah, we've got the usual open source avenues for the mailing list, Salt users, and an IRC channel, and then the other Slack channel that Mircea mentioned. And all of the contact information for Salt Stack, the company, is at saltstack.com. And we've got a support team and a professional services team that can help with complex installations or questions.
And if people want to get in touch with the two of you personally, are you on Twitter? Do you blog? I know you're on LinkedIn.
Yes, we are both on Twitter. My handler is my name, Mircea Ulinic. The same is my blog. I write sometimes when I have some spare time. It's mircea.net. And also, they always can find me on the Slack channel and ask question.
And that would be Network to Code, a Slack team, right?
Yes, exactly.
Seth?
I'm on Twitter as Whiting, Whiteinge, and I'm on Freenode under the same handle.
And Chris and David, if people want to get in touch with you guys and ask you, I don't know, about the life under the Broadcom umbrella.
Yeah, Chris can answer that one for me.
How can people get in touch with you, David?
Okay, so you can find me on Twitter at vtech42, and you can reach out to me via the blog, so ipengineer.net.
And Chris?
We're starting to thaw out in Canada, and the internet's coming back, so blogging is starting to come up again, so that it would be controlissueswithak.net, and on Twitter at netmanchris.
And you have to repeat that quote from today's blog post about the four S's of, how was it? You have to design your network with four S's in mind, right?
Stability, scalability, simplicity, and stupidity.
Thank you.
Yes. Not mine. That's a friend of mine, Jeff Cable. And yeah, it was the other great one that came out that I'm trying to use is we need to stop looking at stupidity and deciding to call it innovation.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah. We need to start calling out stupidity when somebody else tries to call it innovation. It was something like that. It was like one of those, whoa, I've got it written down. You need to stop while I write this down. That was beautiful.
Okay, with that, let's wrap this up because it can't get any better. I'm Ivan Pipelniak, and you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. You want to listen to more episodes, just go to podcast.ipspace.net and start exploring. Thank you, Mircea. Thank you, Seth. And thank you, Chris and David, for this wonderful chat.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Software Gone Wild. If you want to learn more about software-defined networking, network automation, and related topics, visit sdn.ipspace.net and explore our courses, books, webinars, and podcasts.